Many changes occurred in Grand Rapids and Itasca County between 1916, when Blandin had purchased the paper mill, and the early 1930s that we've just been looking at. One of the most significant of those changes was the development of the tourism industry through expansion of the resort system. The Herald Review described the appeal of the region in a 1931 editorial welcoming summer visitors. The view of the lake as the morning sun rises presents a vision which time cannot dim. The contrast of the dark green of the pine and the white of the birch is one of nature's rarest combinations. The attractiveness of Itasca County was at last being systematically publicized in an effort to bring more visitors to the region. By 1931, there were 20 resorts for every one of 1916. They were located on virtually every large lake for miles around the town, and the highways were crowded with summer guests. One Grand Rapids businessman ranked tourism and all the money it brought to the region as important as manufacturing, agriculture, and mining. I.G. Becker was a typical Itasca County resort owner of the era. He purchased property on a lake near Marcel, north of Grand Rapids, and started business with one cabin. By the summer of 1932, he had a whole flock of new buildings, all constructed of peeled, oiled, and varnished logs. The site for each new structure had been carefully chosen, and a visitor described the overall design as very pleasing. The surrounding forest was groomed and thinned, and the lakeshore was cleaned and improved. Fishing and hunting were excellent. The resort owners formed an association to advertise the region and to stress the availability of pleasant lodging, such as the Becker establishment. The association raised $1,200 in 1930 to erect and staff a booth at the Chicago Outdoor Show. There, many people were made aware of Itasca County's appeal, and enough new visitors arrived during the summer to warrant repeating the venture in 1931. Grand Rapids' most venerable tourist institution, noted in a 1930 issue of the Herald Review as a distinct asset to the town, continued to draw a yearly quota of young visitors and parents from the eastern and southeastern sections of the country. By 1932, George Green's Camp Mishawaka on Pokegama Lake boasted all permanent dormitories and buildings. The tents were a thing of the past. Enrollment at the camp decreased somewhat during the Depression, but the special Pullman cars still arrived to herald the beginning of each new season. Early in 1933, George Green died at his Washington, D.C. home, and some feared the camp might be abandoned. However, Green had arranged for the continuance of what had meant so much to him, and staff and counselors arrived to operate the camp as usual. The Herald Review consistently encouraged the development of tourism and always editorially welcomed the summer visitors. It extended plaudits when a day-long meeting was held at the Pokegama Hotel to bring resort owners and Grand Rapids businessmen together and encourage them to cooperate in every possible way. Together, they listened to suggestions about ways to provide entertainment to further entice tourists to the region. Another session dealt with advertising, and still another raised the issue of conservation. Some people in the resort business appeared to be as short-sighted as the loggers who, with no eye to the future, had so thoroughly stripped the Northland of its timber. There were warnings that the preservation of game and fish was vital to the resort industry. An editorial in the Herald Review backed that contention, stating that we must not sacrifice the game and fish of this great country to the cause of dollars and greed. But tourism also had its drawbacks. The Herald Review lamented that, with so many people arriving, the wilderness was no longer the same as in the good old days, when all property was safe from thievery. Vandalism and theft in the rural areas had become commonplace. The complaint was lodged that nothing loose seems to be safe. A 1931 Herald Review editorial sounded a familiar refrain. We argue that there is no benefit to be obtained from the Headwaters dams. To local residents, the dams still appeared to have no purpose while alternately causing floods or low river water at the most inopportune times. Not long after that editorial, though, the Army Corps of Engineers reassessed the half-century-old policies that regulated the water levels in the upper Mississippi Basin. They decided that henceforth, water storage and discharge would be at more moderate levels, news received with considerable satisfaction in Grand Rapids. The Herald Review stated that many years of agitation and effort had finally brought results, but ironically, the situation of the long-standing controversy was too late to be of much use to the paper mill, as indicated, its power demands had so increased that the river supplied only a negligible amount of the total. A 1932 front-page article in the Herald Review headlined, Grand Rapids is County Shopping Headquarters, and stressed the wide variety of goods available in the town. But the town's businessmen were also adopting new merchandising techniques. A visitor to the store of longtime Grand Rapids merchant Henry Hughes noted that great changes in retail trade had taken place in a relatively short period of time in Grand Rapids. Once, toting teams had regularly arrived in town to pick up barrels, big sacks, and large crates of goods for the lumber camps. That had given way to a time when customers placed orders and clerks scurried to make up individual portions from big containers. Now there were no old-fashioned counters behind which one was not supposed to be, and the high, deep shelves of the past were also gone. Hughes' remodeled store featured wide aisles which separated easily accessible, well-stocked, low shelves, small boxes, and bottles, replaced the bulk goods of an earlier day. Kramer's long-established business gave up independent status to associate with the Ben Franklin chain of 1,000 stores. Its new format featured prominently displayed 5-cent and 10-cent counters, and the interior was remodeled to conform with the rest of the chain. H.D. Powers was among those who listened to speakers at a hardware marketing session explain the need for eye appeal. He heard that window displays and attractively arranged goods would bring new customers and also be of aid in the long-standing and bitter struggle between local merchants and the mail-order sales catalogs. Buyers would be enticed by modern merchandising just as in the big cities. The Hotel Pokegama underwent further modernization as hot and cold running water was made available in all rooms. New rugs and carpets were laid and the roof was replaced. But despite the changes, the hotel no longer enjoyed its earlier reputation. A visitor to Grand Rapids in the early 1930s recalled years later that the place was getting pretty old and was not much of a hotel anymore. The high-ceilinged room seemed quite old-fashioned, and the building was cold and drafty. The Northwestern Bell Telephone Company contributed further to the modernization of the town with a particularly high percentage of subscribers. The local office moved to more spacious quarters that would accommodate 2 boxcar loads of switchboards and other equipment. Once installed, the Grand Rapids telephone system was one of the most up-to-date in the state. The new arrangements depended on a common battery system that eliminated crank telephones and the tangled garble of voices that had plagued the first system. Now, callers merely lifted the receiver to reach the operator and place a number. Between 4,300 and 4,500 calls were made each business day in 1932 on the town's 703 telephones. Another innovation was daily mail service. The Grand Rapids Commercial Club and the City Council worked together to meet post office requirements for home delivery. Although the plat of the village listed street names and numbers, in many cases they were not in common use, Some who lived in Grand Rapids had no idea of their legal addresses. The post office required that all streets have identifying signs at intersections, each house have a number, and that there be sidewalks and street lights because of winter darkness before appointing carriers to make the rounds, including morning and afternoon downtown delivery. Street names in general use honored the Brainerd businessman who had played a role in the original development of the town. By the early 1930s, Grand Rapids attached little sentiment to those names, and a street numbering system was adopted. The town's main north-south street, long known as Leland Avenue, was the one exception. Because it led to the lake that remained one of the town's major attractions, citizens petitioned the city council to name it Pokegama. The council obligingly designed the thoroughfare, Pokegama Avenue. So, other than that, to a straight numbering system, and that was accepted without any problem in Grand Rapids. But next time, let's take a look at what happens when a serious proposal is made to change the name of the town.